with the Leisure Man, the Leisure Man, the Leisure Man, the Leisure Man, the Leisure Man.
Welcome to the Midweek Podcast for the Leisure Man. I'm Andrew Perloff. He's Paul Papps. And today is a special day because just a few minutes ago, Paul said, I have a hot take. It's not really that hot, but I think you're really going to like it. And that's the kind of thing that gets me really excited.
Okay, you know I'm college football first, NFL second. Yep. I've always leaned towards college football, though I love the NFL like everybody does pretty much.
So in high school, did you root for the JV team first and then the varsity team second?
That's fair. That's fair. Here's my take. This has been a great start to the NFL season in every way possible. Mm. And this has been a muddled start to the college football season. Here's a couple reasons. College football, as Paul Feinbaum, I heard just say it perfectly, Alabama kind of sucks the air out of the room with college football because it feels like the result is preordained. Is that the phrase I'm looking for?
That'll work.
Predestined.
That'll work.
It feels like Alabama already has a spot in the national title game, which they almost do. And then there's like a couple.
So wait, why is that different this year than last year?
It's just piling up. It's piling up. I would say that no season more than now does it feel like Alabama is rolling and it's going to take a hiccup for them to not win it. It feels like there's five teams eligible for the national title this year, maybe six. And it doesn't feel like that way in the NFL. It always feels like there's about a good dozen teams that could win the Super Bowl. I think that's fair.
Well,
maybe a dozen.
I don't know.
But let's say there's
But last year, Georgia came in at number 15 and was a whisper away. You know, Georgia blew all that up. They weren't supposed to be like that last year.
It's possible, but it just has that feel to it. And the college football has not been great. The primetime games have not been great. You had Ohio State, Penn State, which was great. And here's about the NFL, though. The NFL, all the topics the first five, 6 weeks of the season has been about on-the-field product. Mahomes, even go back to Ryan Fitzpatrick, which seems like a long time ago.
Yeah.
The Chicago Bears, Khalil Mack, Sam Darnold, Saquon Barkley. It's almost all on the field topics. And in the past 5 years, if you go back to, I'm talking way back, you know, when Adrian Peterson got suspended to open the season, when Ray Rice got suspended to open the season, then the past couple of years with Colin Kaepernick and taking a knee during the anthem.
Deflategate?
Deflategate. You have to go back like 6 or 7 years to where the start of the NFL season wasn't clouded by an off field topic. I'm talking 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, but did that make the sport worse because that off-field stuff is going on?
Not worse.
Not for, like you don't care. What the heck do you care about all that?
But I think
when you're watching games.
I don't care while I'm watching games, but from Sunday till the next week, the coverage has been mostly about on-field topics this year and not off-field topics. And in the past, believe me, we do this for a living. I do this for a living. I know exactly what we talked about in September the past 6 years, and it wasn't about what was going on in the field for the most part.
Yeah, but, you know, I've always been contrary to that. Like, I always thought that was noise and kind of lies.
Right, but it still was what it was. It still was.
Like that, but that's all the Nancy Armour crowd in USA Today. Like, yes, I mean, the opinion columnists are always going to pick those topics up. But the ratings and stuff, I think the ratings were different. Do you think the ratings are back to normal because there's less controversy, or do you think there are other factors? I'm not so sure.
I would say there's at least four factors that contribute to why the ratings are back. The election is kind of in the rearview mirror.
Yes, that's a huge one.
Donald Trump, the president, still gets covered all day, every day.
He stole so much attention last year.
Colin Kaepernick and kneeling for the anthem has been a non-topic the first 5 weeks. Zero. Almost zero. Eric Reed got signed, the safety for the Panthers, and it wasn't even a blip.
Right, but I don't think the Kaepernick ever really stole from ratings either. There's a lot of data.
I think he contributed.
Yeah, there's a lot of data that there was no impact at all based on demographics.
I could tell you people that I know specifically told me they stopped watching football, and I believe them.
Yeah.
I'm talking 2 years and 1 year ago.
But here's the thing. So there's been super controversial the last 10 years. Ratings peaked like 3 years ago when the league was in complete chaos.
Last year you started the year with no Peyton Manning and no Tom Brady. Don't forget the first month he missed. If Tom Brady and Peyton Manning aren't playing in a nationally televised game, I'm probably not tuning in. We always talk about those Monday night, Thursday night, Sunday night games. If I tune in and it's Jacoby Brissett versus Sean Mannion, Rams versus Colts, I'm not going to probably make an appointment to watch.
Right, but to me, like, I'm sounding defensive. The NFL has been the same great league entertainment-wise for the last 5 years.
Okay.
It's just, like, there's distractions that the columnists love, but the reality is, like, hardcore football fans have just been as into it as ever. And okay. It peaked, like, 4 years ago.
Then what would you pinpoint the ratings drop last year compared to the ratings boost this year?
I think the Trump and the Trump-Clinton election stole a lot of attention. Also, I noticed all the primetime networks had bad matchups last year. They put a lot of the AFC South in the mm-hmm. beginning of the year.
Yep.
Now they got smart and they realized, like, hey, we can't just bury Thursday night. So they've had a much better Thursday night. Like this week it's Eagles, Giants. That's always a huge rating. They had, you know, they've had playoff teams galore in primetime. They did not do that last year.
One thing going back to college football, it's too bad there was not a powerful commissioner type with the NCAA who would not allow Alabama to schedule the Citadel. That would not allow teams to schedule teams that are so inferior.
So let me ask you back to college football. Why does it feel like, I feel like it's bad. Like, why are there less sort of game of the centuries so far? You know, not game of the centuries. It's just the Saturday nights have not really, we haven't been hitting at a high level lately this year.
Everything has to come together for those games. They have to be scheduled. Mm-hmm. They have to be in prime time. You know, Texas-Oklahoma last week was a noon Eastern game. That meant that you're on the
Red River rivalry.
Right, but that's a game where you have to be able to flex that tonight if you can.
Isn't that like a 60-year tradition that they play that one at noon?
Money always trumps tradition.
Yeah.
It's really too bad. I watch the Red River Rivalry and Red River Shootout, I call it. But that was a tough one.
Call it that because you don't like to say Red River Rivalry, right?
Yeah, and because I like the tradition. Shootout doesn't mean inherently anything negative.
Oh, is that why they changed? I didn't even know that background. I thought it was literally because announcers had trouble saying Red River Rivalry.
Well, that's the new one. It used to be the Red River Shootout.
Oh, I didn't know the history of that.
Easy to say.
Now, and it's always the State Fair at noon, right? So, yeah, I hear what you're saying. I feel like, but is that all going to change in college football? It'll all even out because whatever the top teams are, they're going to play each other.
Yeah, but you can't, you know, they don't have the ability to flex in college football, the ability to organize the schedule for the best. Like, the NFL organizes the schedule in the best interest of the sport. The individual colleges organize their schedule what's in the best interest for them, not the fans. When Alabama's playing UL Monroe or, you know, University of Louisiana, not LSU, but the Raging Cajuns.
Yeah.
Who's tuning in for that?
Not me.
Right.
Although it's fun to watch 15 minutes of Tua. But we got that all in the rearview mirror. Yeah, everyone has that one cupcake late. But so it's going to start to pick up, isn't it? I mean, it's just
yes. November is always fun.
Yeah, November. And, you know, we'll get the Heisman watch. It'll pick up. Don't be down on your sport.
I'm not down on my sport. I'm just saying it feels a little predictable right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little predictable.
Notre Dame's undefeated. Like, these are some good storylines.
Notre Dame still has to overcome the showing they had 4 or 5 years ago with Manti Te'o, where they made the national title.
But we're actually setting up for a good November. Think about it. You have Alabama's great. You have Georgia's amazing. And you have Notre Dame is great. There's some potential.
It'll be fun.
Okay. Okay. So that was
what do you got for us today?
That was your hot take. We talked about before the show getting into this. I sent out a tweet, actually. I'm going to take credit for this. I was watching basketball, A Love Story, the ESPN documentary.
It's good. I watched.
It's kind of weird. It's kind of random. I don't totally understand, like, how it all fits together. But I saw this 10-minute special on Havlicek Stole the Ball. You know that famous scene, Havlicek stole the ball, Havlicek stole the ball. It was the Sixers versus the Celtics. And I'm like, these guys are not built like the old players. They are just like, it looks like your dad is playing the game. They're all dribbling, looking down at the ball on the floor. Nobody has court vision. They can't shoot. Their jump shots are just different. They're not dunking the ball. They're not weightlifting. So my thought was like, wow, Andrew Wiggins could do some damage back then.
Right.
So the question then is like, how much better are today's athletes than those athletes? And I think significantly.
I think the biggest thing for the NBA in the past 20 years is the development of the big man where you don't have to stay by the basket anymore, where it's almost assumed that if you're 7 foot, you're probably a stretch forward. How many true power guys come into the league each year? One? DeAndre Ayton from Arizona is a back-to-the-basket guy who can step out. But more like Olajuwon.
There hasn't been a DeAndre Ayton in a while. Like, he's an exception.
Total anomaly of a back-to-the-basket guy. You go back, Carl Anthony Towns, when he joined out of Kentucky, when he joined the Timberwolves. He's a back-to-the-basket guy with a lot of moves, though.
Carl Anthony Towns, Ayton, and Joel Embiid, they don't want to put their back to the basket. They like facing the basket.
I was watching a preseason game with the 76ers, and Joel Embiid didn't step in the paint for about 12 minutes.
Yeah, no, he wants to be around the top of the key.
He was working out his outside game, I think, in the preseason.
Oh, no, he plays like that. He does. No, why would anyone want to go down and bang when you can stay out there and shoot? Embiid has no interest in posting up. It's annoying and it's tiring.
But I do have to agree with you. You know, I'm part of that. Michael Jordan was the greatest.
Well, that's my question. Wait, Paul, is the mid-90s, I'm not sure that that's a step down. That's a different conversation. The rules were different. There was less emphasis on three-point. You could grab guys. So maybe that basketball was a little better.
We all think what we grew up with was better. It's hard to admit that it isn't. Yeah. That's old guy syndrome with sports. Yeah. But the product on the court, I think, is better now because the three-pointer opens up the court so much with spacing. The game never feels slow. I don't think there's a team that really feels slow in the NBA like those Knicks teams and those Miami Heat teams did.
Yeah.
The three-pointer also gives you such a sense of anticipation. Guys can go on these hot runs that they didn't do in the 80s. When Michael Jordan, I think, did he score 7 three-pointers in a game or 7.5?
Against Portland, the shrug game?
Yeah.
I thought it was 6.
I think it was 6.5.
Yeah.
That was like seeing Neil Armstrong walk on the moon.
Nowadays, that's like a quarter for Curry.
What do you call it? Klay Thompson's had 6 three-pointers in a quarter a couple times in his career, a handful of times.
I will make one contrary argument. There was something about the NBA in the 90s. I don't think they had a robust drug testing program. If you go back...
Kevin Willis? I mean, I'm not accusing, but as far as being jacked...
There were... I mean, well, obviously it starts... I'm not saying mailman in specific, but he's bigger than anybody who's playing the game today. I mean, and then there was Charles Oakley. These guys were monsters. They were way, way thicker. Now you don't see those thick players anymore.
Well, I think because there's no role for the enforcer.
Yeah.
Like Lance Stephenson is the closest thing to an enforcer in the league.
He's
a small forward. You know, Charles Oakley can't survive... There's some big guys like David West who you wouldn't want to get into it with.
He's like 50 though. I think he retired
he
this offseason.
Just turned 50.
He just announced his retirement. But I think like Karl Malone could have caused problems in today's game. I don't think there are anybody to answer someone like him.
But then you have to have a team decide to play pick and roll basketball all day, every day.
Yeah.
Which is what the Utah Jazz did for 15 years.
Also, you know, you don't have the Ewings and the Robinsons and the Elijah Wans. I guess you pull away from the basket so they're not as effective. Were those guys effective today? Because those centers really don't exist anymore.
It would have to be a total team mentality. To me, like the big man resurgence in the NBA would be a team say, we're going to go on the blocks and slow a game down and make another team use all their fouls because they're not going to have anyone really to defend my guys. And that would be like a team right now going 70% run, which I thought the Cowboys might do.
Yeah.
And the Seahawks I think were thinking about a couple years ago. But no one's really done it.
Well, you said it today on the Dan Patrick Show. The defenders are way too fast and strong. I mean, they're ridiculous. They're freaks to stop the run. You can't run in today's NFL unless everyone thinks you're passing.
You would have to power run and make your line like the Cowboys line with Larry Allen.
Even that, if there's no threat of pass, the defenders are just too strong and good, in my opinion. Now, wait, quickly on the other sports. NFL, it's so obvious the difference. You remember when the Redskins had 5 300-pounders on their line? It was a huge deal. Dartmouth College is 320, 340, 320, 320. I mean,
Dartmouth.
Yeah, I'm telling you, good high school lines in Texas have 5 300-pounders. It means it's someone tweeted me, what would Rob Gronkowski do in 1965? There was no Gronks.
Who would be the athlete who's playing now in any sport that you'd like to put on the field court in 1975? I'm going to throw that number out.
75.
That's before weight training and almost anything.
LeBron jumps to mind.
You know, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, they would be like, what's this all about?
Bigger than LeBron and just as athletic.
Yeah, can't quite shoot like LeBron. That's a good one. How about football? Who's the guy? Who's the freak?
A healthy Rob Gronkowski playing in the
Gronk's one
in the mid-70s at tight end when tight ends used to block.
Yeah.
Remember Kellen Winslow was the freak show tight end for the Chargers.
The first guy, really.
He's 6'3".
Maybe John Mackey or
6'4".
Something. What about a speedy or like the receivers, like the Antonio Browns and the Julio Jones and those guys? I don't think they had them back in 75.
You know, this guy's not a big freak, but can you imagine Von Miller against a 1970s offensive tackle? The lack of athleticism at the tackle position then?
Because they didn't have to pass block 700 times a game.
Or they just put their hands up and, you know, held the guy. He had one move, a bull rush or a swim move. Those are the two moves you had.
And also, no offense to Hall of Famer Bob Greasy, but he was no Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers would make some plays now. But I don't know because the rules were different, so I'm not sure. Real quick, baseball. You and I have been arguing all day about baseball. There are 9 pitchers on the Braves staff who throw the ball 100 miles an hour. There was one in all of baseball with Nolan Ryan. But I'm telling you, they throw it so much faster. And don't tell me that's not a factor.
But, you know, it's too bad you couldn't do – I know you can't do this rule. What if 100 miles an hour was not allowed at Major League Baseball? What if they made a rule for safety? Well, I just came up with this. Boy, I just.
But why? It's the best thing about baseball. It means home runs and strikeouts.
But you have pitchers have much shorter careers because of Tommy John surgery.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but then they come back from their first Tommy John and start throwing 100 again. That's, you know, just, by the way, why don't they just do Tommy John to start with? Like, I don't even know, like, why you have to wait.
We need a baseball guy to come on. What would it do for the game of baseball if you said if you hit 100 miles an hour on a radar gun, it's a ball, and you so you got to ease up?
So what, who's that?
You'd increase offense.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, guys are hitting homers off these 100. They set an all-time record.
Guys would learn how to move the ball more and not just throw in spots.
I can't stand this move the ball around. This I hated the 1980s St. Louis Cardinals more than anybody. The Tommy Herr, Willie McGee, that is the worst team.
Producing runs, you hated?
I hate it. I like Dave Kingman. I wanted home run. My favorite players of all time are home run hitters. Like, it's all I care about.
Tommy.
Oh, I love the...
Rob Deere.
The big steroid era, before I knew it was steroids.
Cecil Fielder.
I would buy a ticket to see Cecil Fielder 100 times over out of 100 over who, like I know you like Gwynn, but come on, you're going to buy a
young Dustin Pedroia putting in play all the time?
He had some power. He had some pop. He would have been he'd be the Joe Morgan. No, I like, well, you're not a home run guy. You're from Chicago. That's all people do in Chicago is hit home runs.
Well, they made it easy there.
This is why, because you're too scarred from Mike Schmidt hitting home runs every time he came to plate in Wrigley Field.
He did. You know, I checked the stats. He hit a home run every plate appearance at Wrigley. It's unbelievable. No one goes 100%.
They had two pitchers going way back to what
you think.
Rick Rushel and Dick Tidrow, who Schmidt averaged like 600 against and hit nothing but homers.
Rick Rushel wakes up from his sleep going, Mike Schmidt. You know, because it means,
Hey, you guys have the more recent World Series win, so I'll give you that.
Final topic. The player from your youth that you most, if you can remember back at the time, that you most wished you could get on your team. Football, basketball, or baseball?
Like my current team? Or
the team you rooted for as a child. So before age 15.
I had Dr. J, but somebody like that.
From opposing city.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Oh, easy. Lawrence Taylor. Because I was an Eagles fan, and watching him, I'm like, well, this is the best player in the NFL. Why can't we have him?
Boy, Lawrence Taylor's a great call.
Yeah. What do you got?
Mike Schmidt was my guy for baseball because he just seemed so awesome. I was like, if the Cubs could have Mike Schmidt, they could win something. And I was like, why don't they get him? I don't understand it. Football, boy, even though I'm a Walter Payton fan, I remember the first few years of Earl Campbell.
I knew you were going to go Earl Campbell.
And I was like, no one's going to stop this guy ever. And it was just health that stopped him.
Yeah, I mean— Paul, I know Walter Payton's your guy, but you are right behind Bo Jackson and Earl Campbell. Just admit it.
I love Bo Jackson, Earl Campbell, Walter Payton, and Guinness. Don't forget, it's tailgate season. Go to your local pub and get a pint of Guinness just like you've been doing your whole life, but go to your local package store. Bring some Guinness home, put it in the fridge, or bring it to your tailgate this weekend. The way to spice up your tailgate is get some Guinness Draft, Guinness Pale Ale, Nitro Stout, Rye Pale Ale, and Twerpin Stout, which is my personal favorite. It's all there, Perloff.
Oh, dude, this is your season, buddy. By the way, before we move on, I just want to point out, too, you snuck something in the DP show this week. You're like, yeah, the NFL game's all messed up. Where are the 80-yard runs? Where are the Marcus Duprees of my youth? you love, like, these old-school Eric Dickerson breaking off long runs.
I'm going to save it. I'm going to save it for freezing cold takes. We're going to do some take checking for the first month of the season. But the death of the feature running back, even though you got Todd Gurley's, people don't know. They don't understand, man. All right, Leisureman Podcast. Stick around. Freezing Cold Takes. Joining us now on the Leisureman Podcast, one of our good pals. I say that because we were, I think, the first people to have him on a radio show or podcast. He's Fred Siegel, Freezing Cold Takes / Old Takes Exposed on Twitter. For those of you who don't know, for years, Freddie has been doing a Lord's work, calling out people who make improper takes or do a take and don't answer for it months, days, years, even hours later. Fred, thanks for joining Leisureman. How's the website going this year? I hear you're stoking it up and becoming a media mogul.
Yeah, I'm becoming one of the huge media moguls. I'm probably going to be bigger than Bleacher Report in like 2 months.
No, is Freezing Cold Takes going to have a website?
Kind of just re-energized my brand because, I mean, mostly I've been Twitter, Facebook, social media, but I'm trying to push this forward into energy, a direction that is beyond like cool social media account and like establish myself as one of the official unbiased platforms for sports commentary and banter. So that's what I'm trying to develop and I just posted a new kind of branding and logo and everything that's going to be what I'm going to be using going forward. I actually just posted it like 2 hours ago.
Awesome.
If you guys see it on, it's pinned on my Twitter account at Old Takes Exposed. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm not projected to be at Bleacher Report's level, though. That was.
Okay. So how have things changed?
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, boy. Sorry.
Kyle Martino from the soccer coverage here, Premier League coverage over at
Is this your guys' booth?
Yeah.
Do I have to leave?
We're on with Old Take Exposed, by the way.
Oh.
Fred Siegel.
Kyle Martino, did you have something to do with the World Cup?
Oh,
you mean the failure? Yeah. Like, was that my fault?
Hold on, Kyle. You can put this headset on real quick. We're joining by Fred Siegel of Freezing Cold Takes on Twitter. Kyle Martino of Premier League coverage.
Did you just blame me for the World Cup failure?
Not specifically,
yeah, I think
Fred.
So. No, there was something.
So
like
culpable,
no, I don't
not
know
responsible.
With America, you posted something to me about the World Cup. I mean, I think you turned yourself in, maybe.
I just have a guilty conscience.
Martino, did you have a cold take about something World Cup related, and you came back to bite you?
I mean, I have cold takes every weekend, so I mean, they don't come back to bite me because I just pretend I didn't say that.
It may have been Taylor Twellman.
Yeah, it was definitely Taylor. Yeah, 100%.
All those guys with good hair played soccer.
All right, I'll come back when I have another cold take.
Kyle Martino, he works on the Premier League coverage for NBCSN, just did a pop-in. He's taping his podcast in a few minutes.
Oh, you know what he did?
What'd he do?
Yep, this weekend, everybody was talking about how, okay, this is what happened with Kyle Martino. He had a great take this weekend. You know, and Manchester United was down 2-0.
Go ahead.
And he wrote, United will scrap their way back to win 3-2.
You'll forget what you know.
So wait, now
everybody sent it to me to post as if it was like a great take.
So Fred, he had a direct call of a comeback with the exact score hot take.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody sent it to me. That's what, like, I don't pay attention to soccer that much, so it kind of doesn't stick in my head what happened. But that was what happened this weekend. That's how I remember Martino's name.
Wow.
From recently. But I, you know, I used to watch him on the USA men's national team. I mean, I'm not.
So, Fred, how have things changed? How many notices do you get like on a busy sports weekend compared to when you started? You must be flooded.
I get so many. I have to mute my notifications. I have to make sure only look at the mentions and to see because it kind of. But I get, I don't know, on a Sunday, I'll get like 500 per hour, maybe. Everybody sending me stuff. I have 50 messages at one time, direct messages. A lot of it's the same stuff, like the same tweet.
Right, right.
Especially if someone like Skip Bayless or someone like that, it'll be for, it would be like every 100 people would send me the same one.
All right, let's get to the month of September and October. What were some of the coldest takes, NFL, any sport, but NFL is big, college football is big. What are some of the coldest takes so far this fall?
Well, look, I have to talk about McLovin. You, on the September 1st, now, can we talk about this as a cold take?
Yes.
Let's say people are acting like Khalil Mack trade will shift the power of the whole NFL. I love him, but he has 40.5 sacks in the first 4 years, closer to Ryan Kerrigan than Von Miller. Yeah, I said it.
So
do you stand by it?
So last night, I was actually saving this. I was going to tell Paul. Not you, but some Bears writer pulls this tweet up and says, do you still feel the same way? I got hit by 7,000 angry Bears fans saying you are an idiot. Which, by the way, you have to understand, Paul's cautious.
No, I was questioning whether I was going to post it yet. Everybody sent it to me, but I wanted to, I wasn't sure if I was going to post it yet.
You know, Fred, I'm a Bears fan, so I could mitigate this one. I think it's really premature to go either way on this because obviously Khalil Mack is an impact player for the Bears and has been and made their defense way, way better. Now, if they make the playoffs because of Mack and the offense improving, then Perloff's in big, big trouble on this cold take. But I think what's happening right now is Bears fans are in a tizzy because of the offensive performance last week that I've been a Bears fan for 40 years. I've never seen an offense do what they did. That's not – and I'm using the word literally because it's never happened before in Bears history where I saw an offense just fly down the field. Jim McMahon and Walter Payton were great. Eric Kramer and Raymond Harris, they made some noise back in the 90s. But that's my frame of reference. The Bears offense was so out of hand hot last week that Bears fans need to cool down.
Yeah, I was getting the same thing with Trubisky. I was getting all the takes to post about how Trubisky is completely it was worth the number one pick. It was validated. Everything was perfectly validated because of that game.
One great
weekend. I can't do that, but I can post. I did post one of the posts from Jason LaCanfora from the week before with Trubisky. He wasn't as good. And he, like before, wrote, yikes, Mitch Trubisky, again, he is not the best QB on that roster.
What?
That's hot.
Who is the other guy on the roster?
It was hot then.
Chase
then
Daniel.
He threw six touchdowns, whatever it was against the Bucks. Phew.
By the way, so I got killed last night. I was thinking, you know, Paul's been telling me to cool down on the Bears. Don't think they're so. Ryan Kerrigan's a baller, by the way. He had a sack on Monday night. He's an underrated. Pro Football Focus has him as like the fifth best defensive end in the NFL. I just wanted to point that out, Fred, for future consideration.
You know what? I kind of resent Pro Football Focus, and I'll tell you why. Because people cherry pick the Pro Football Focus stats only when it helps them.
Right.
It's just like a device for people to use only when it helps them. And then he won't even mention anything about Pro Football Focus. Pro Football Focus, especially with offensive linemen. Pro Football Focus has a high-grade offensive lineman. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, let's go back to September, October. What is the take that either has already been called out by you or is simmering and just going to be annihilated maybe in late October and November? What stands out to you?
All right, well, I could tell you the best take that I found, and it's not from – look, these are matured cold takes. And what I call matured cold takes is that it was made before September and October, like a couple years ago.
Oh.
But it finally matured into cold take level now. And Sian Fahey had the ultimate one. I mean, it is truly one of the greatest ones I've seen in a long time.
Oh,
in April of 2017, he said, past two drafts, teams have given up multiple first-round picks for Goff, Wentz, Mahomes, and Watson. And then he wrote, teams are panicking.
Wow. I mean, that's Ooh. Four guys who have been the hottest quarterback in the sport at some point in the last calendar year.
Yeah, all four of them. Unbelievable.
Wow. All right, let's get to
Mahomes is on a fire level heat. Of takes. If he turns out to be bad, watch out. And if Josh Allen turns out to be great, watch out with that too. I can tell you that.
How about a really impressive take from September or October where you're like, this person called something or this person could hit an absolute grand slam with this take in the next few months?
No doubt. I don't remember who the Bills were playing on September 16th, but Vontae Davis had left the game and he didn't play in the third or fourth quarter. And then, like, in the middle of the fourth quarter, this guy, Bradley Gelber, the Bills writer for USA Today, said, I wonder if Vontae Davis retired at halftime. And he actually retired at halftime. That was the story.
Man.
Do you need an unbelievable story.
Do you need any proof?
Is a player ever retired at halftime?
Do you need any proof that this... One. Do you need proof that this writer didn't have a tip and was just throwing that out there to try to hit a home run?
I'm taking his word for it.
Wow, that's gutsy.
I think it was more of tongue-in-cheek, the way he said it. I don't think he expected it even when he said it. But still counts.
We have a lot of media members who listen to this. Should we tag you or should we tag other people when we're saying something hot? It's just assumed now. Paul and I think that it'll get to you. Like, we don't have to alert you.
I think that, I'm going to jump in real quick, Fred.
Tag me because, one of the reasons certain media people hate me, they resent me and hate me, is less because I post the takes and more because whenever they post something, some 25 people will tag me under it. And that bothers them. It's annoying.
But isn't...
If you CC me first on your tweet, then nobody's going to tag me under it. It's a trick.
But I think that if I put out a hot take and I put old takes exposed on the link, isn't that like inviting yourself to someone's party? It feels a little desperate.
It's also a little bit of a disclaimer saying, I could be exposed.
Just because you know other people are going to send it. Like in college, you remember in college when people used to run for the government, student government?
Mm-hmm.
And he'd beat you right outside your classroom and try to tell you about the platform. And as a college kid, I just didn't care one bit about it. So I'd find So I find a person. The first one I find, I tell them put on the sticker of their campaign.
Right.
And I just start wearing their sticker everywhere. I didn't care who it was. And then nobody would bother me because they thought I was with that campaign.
Shocked.
Taggle takes exposed, nobody bothers you anymore.
Here's one thing I was thinking for you, because you're becoming such a mogul, as we said. I'm glad we got to know you before you got too big for us. Can you put out maybe some type of sensor or alert when you could tell someone's faux taking? Because there's a lot of faux taking where I don't think the person really believes what they're taking.
Well, one of the main faux takes moves that people do is it's very – they reverse – try to reverse jinx themselves.
Right.
And they use me to try to reverse jinx. So what they'll do is they'll post, this team's going to get killed, our team, and it's their team.
Mm.
So someone will say, there's no way we win today. Knowing very well he doesn't actually think that. And then he'll tag me afterwards. Say, look, I was wrong, I'm turning myself in. It's like
wow,
protection for themselves.
Do you guys believe in that, by the way?
I
do for my own team. I reverse jinx myself every weekend.
Oh, wow.
You don't do that, Paul, where you say, like, oh, man, my teams are – I say it's the Bears. Bears are going to get killed, when secretly you're saying that, so you hope they don't.
Oh, I absolutely think
that
the Bears –
Well, if you have Bears, if you bet them, or your team is the Eagles, I assume?
Yeah, I'm Eagles.
Yeah, Eagles. Eagles aren't going to win this year. Look, they're done. Season's over.
Right. It such lowers the expectation. All right, Fred, we got to run, but hey, how can people find the website that's coming up?
Okay, well, the website's not up yet, but it's going to be freezingcoldtakes.com. But go to my Twitter feed and my pinned tweet, and you'll see the new branding. And follow me on Instagram at freezingcoldtakes and Facebook at freezingcoldtakes. And, I'm expanding on those platforms as well. So
I think you should.
I appreciate it. And,
I have an idea for your website.
I'm looking forward to it.
If you remember the old George Iceman Gervin sitting on the chair of ice with the basketballs, and it's called the Iceman, what if you remade that poster with you and you call yourself the Iceman because you're the administrator of Freezing Cold Takes? Redo the George Gervin Iceman poster. It'll be gold.
I would do it. I don't know if it would be the same as the Iceman, but... I don't know if I really could pull it off as well, but yeah, I mean, of course, I could do the.
That'll really speak to your younger audience.
One thing I could do was finger roll.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. Hey, thanks a lot, Fred Siegel, Freezing Cold Takes. Thanks for joining the Legion.
All right, thanks, guys.
You know what? That's why this is a great country. That some dude who just loves sports and sit back there and would follow Twitter and notice people making takes that never got checked says, "I'm going to start my own thing," and now. He's probably making good dough at this. It goes back to guys like Darren Revelle, Mel Kiper, who just said, I'm going to do my own thing and do it really well and then find a way to make money off it.
Yeah, it's great. I think you got to give Dave Portnoy credit for Barstool, too.
Of course.
I mean, like Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, like start with passion. If the passion's there, you'll make it work. And Old Takes Exposed is such a snarky way to get in that you just have to love it.
Now, if somebody would just sponsor Snug Alerts, we could all make this full circle.
Yeah, that's... kind of similar, except you already established. You weren't a guy in your basement.
No.
Not that Fred's in his basement, but you didn't. Yeah, so I don't know if it's a little different.
You haven't seen me at home during the day. I'm mostly
actually,
in,
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
in
you
my
are
basement.
Pretty much in your basement.
Thanks for listening to Leisureman Podcast. Download, subscribe, and don't forget, Sunday night, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, the live Leisureman Radio Show extravaganza on NBC Sports Radio. Stick around. Kyle Martino is going to take over the mic from us.
Oh, we got to give it up for Kyle.
Check out his podcast, the soccer podcast. It's great. Talk to you later. We're Leisureman.